Time now for the College Basketball Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
We broke news when we released the Brooke 40 statement. I was glad we didn't get scooped on that one.
With SI's Pat 40.
Come on. This is unbelievable. Dan Wetzel is aligned with Duke University basketball.
Here's Pat and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. New intro.
New intro. It's March.
This is March. It is, though.
It is.
It is. There's all sorts of wild stuff happening. College basketball season's full effect. Sully wants us to talk more college basketball.
We'll do a little. Rundown, we'll do a lot. We'll do plenty.
The rundown, he mentioned the four huge games this weekend. And one is what we're actually going to talk about, UNC at Duke, which is huge because of somebody's last game at Cameron Indoor.
Yep.
Yeah, whatever that guy's name is. Not important.
And we're not talking about Paolo Banchero's last game.
But it is his too.
But he has just signed an NIL deal with Yahoo Sports to promote our Tourney Pick'em co-worker. Co-worker.
This we need to address. We need to discuss.
I have a co-worker.
You have a co-worker. Paolo Banchero and Chet Holmgren have signed on at NIL deals from Yahoo Sports.
Now, welcome to the team.
Yeah.
If you finish the coffee in the break room, you got to make the new pot. That's the damn rule.
Yeah.
No leftovers in the fridge for more than one day.
Uh-huh.
Don't be bringing fish to the microwave at leftovers.
Yeah, no
either.
Fish in the microwave. And if the new guy wants to pick up a round to win over some goodwill, no one's going to be upset on Friday afternoon.
Let's just retrace though here. Let's think about this.
Neither of these guys are legal to buy. Yeah, alcohol,
no, they're
by
not.
The way.
They're not.
So we have coworkers.
You're,
hey,
you're already courting a scandal.
We're excited if we hire anybody. And we got Chet Holmgren. Yeah. I mean, I thought he'd want to go play in the NBA, but apparently he wants to work for Yahoo Sports as a promoter.
Tell him to make deadline. But now this is Dan Wetzel talking. Bush Light drinking, mow my own lawn. Disliker of the establishment, always, you know, holding up the little guy, the common man. And now you're in bed with Duke. You're in bed with Duke. Come on. This is unbelievable. Dan Wetzel is aligned with Duke University basketball. What a moment.
Yeah, I would have taken like some JUCO transfer to like Wichita State personally, but he scored a 37 on his ACT. whatever. Listen, just your jealousy over there. We traded Pat 40. We got Chet Holmgren.
You did get more upside there. I admit that.
Anyway, hopefully they'll still not talk to me during.
We should have signed Kennedy Chandler. That's just my opinion, but whatever.
Anyway, back to us picking Sully's rundown. Four huge games. Guess what the second huge game that we must discuss today? It's got 1, 2, 3, 4 bullet points underneath to discuss. Number 15, Arkansas, at number 13, Tennessee.
Yeah.
It's a good game.
Small chance it's for an SEC title. Small. Very small.
It's a good game. Auburn's got a gag to like someone horrible. Who are they?
South Carolina. Yeah. It's really.
If it's on the road, they might gag it. They're the worst road team.
But they're home.
Okay, then no, they're not gagging it.
Not unless they get Cluck Norris down there.
Cluck at point.
If Cluck gets off the bus with South Carolina,
it,
then
Auburn. Yeah,
they're then done. We got a battle. Yeah.
Coach BP is going to have to run the other way if Cluck Norris comes after him. All right. But other than that, number 15 versus number 13 is, I mean, it's not exactly like this bombshell event.
I think there's one Final Four contender on the floor when those two teams play. Unfortunately, it's not the team in orange.
Oh, what's sad for Sully.
Not really. They're really streaky. They have a chance. They're one of the seven teams that could win it all, I think. But you're right.
All right. Just we're already off the rails. 2 minutes in. Can you tell us who your other six are that can win it all, Sully?
Gonzaga, Baylor, Kansas, Auburn, Tennessee, Arizona.
Didn't get to Duke
or Kentucky?
Duke.
Kentucky?
I don't like Kentucky.
No.
Give me Duke. Tennessee over Kentucky.
Well, I like Kentucky.
Yeah. I think Kentucky's the best team in the SEC. Neutral floor. Yeah. I don't know.
I like this Kentucky team an awful lot.
Yeah.
You got to guard Oscar, man. Plus, I just love that they have a star player named Oscar.
First Oscar since back. Oscar Robertson, I think, who's been really good.
You know? Might be.
Yeah, they have a guy that gets 30 rebounds a game, but.
Yeah.
The great Oscar Avila used to hit some great shots in the playgrounds of Indianapolis when I lived there.
Oscar
Robertson. Buddy of mine I played basketball with.
Oscar Schmidt from Brazil back in the day.
Oscar Schmidt. Oscar Combs used to be the most famous Oscar involved with Kentucky basketball. Anyway.
Absolutely.
Regardless, all right, Tennessee. Title contender, says Tennessee fan. Let's get to this. Coach K might be, you might have heard, he's retiring at the end of the season.
They've kept it really quiet.
It's been quiet. Quiet news. Yeah. They host Carolina on Saturday, 6 p.m. Eastern. Duke is giving 12. Let's make a pick along this just for the, because this is a wild one. Like, I could see them winning by 45 points. Just like, I mean, the players have got to play like out of their mind in this game. Massive collection. They're talking about nearly 100 former players there. I mean, we're talking Hall of Famers, All-Americans. Yeah. I mean, you know, there'd be more if they weren't busy playing in the NBA. Get in price for a ticket right now if you want two. I just looked on StubHub, $3,200.
That's the cheapest get in.
That's the cheapest, worst seat. Now, there's not a bad seat. Cameron Indoor seats, what, 82 or something? Or
91, 80, 31.
91. Bunch of students. You're obviously going to have massive amounts of university tickets because, you know, I don't think Grant Hill and Shane Battier and these guys are paying their own way.
And then captains of industry, like left and right.
Oh, well,
everybody wants to go. The demand was so big that Duke was, like, trying to diplomatically tell some of the B-list people, hey, we play Florida State in the second to last home game. If you'd like to come and see Coach K, this could be a good opportunity for you.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because we ain't getting you in on March 4th or 5th for North Carolina. So, I mean.
And even if you get in, you're not going to get any time. Like, it's just going to be overwhelming.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's, I mean, he had a press conference today. I'm in Durham. I went to the press conference and he was great. Classic K where, you know, I mean, he's the smartest guy in the sport, so he's always worth listening to. He's got insight. He has wit. Got a little bit of bite to him on occasion, and he did today where Mark Emmert was involved. We'll get to that. But, you know, he said that they're trying to figure out how he can have time to talk to everybody. He said, you know, I had a long conversation on the phone with Quinn Snyder. He's been texting with Kyrie Irving, you know, on and on and on with these former players. But there's going to be all these guys in the house. And I think they're, you know, looking at stuff Saturday night, but then Sunday morning, more stuff. And, I mean, it's just going to be the absolute who's who of Duke basketball and, to a degree, who's who of college basketball over the last 35 years.
Amazing. Yeah. And so it's literally like you get that many guys, you spend 2 minutes with each guy.
Yeah.
You're out of time. It's got to be somewhat overwhelming. All right. So what are your takeaways from the Coach K press conference and then maybe – we'll discuss just a little bit of Coach K himself.
Yeah, yeah. Well, first off, you know, my question I asked him was, you know, you've been counseling players on how to handle the emotions of senior day for 40-some years here. It's finally your senior day. What counsel do you give yourself? And he's like, "That's, you know, I don't know." He said, "I just gonna have to kind of play it how it comes." But, you know, he anticipates it's going to be very emotional, especially seeing all the former players and everything there. Wants to beat Carolina, you know, wants to try to keep his mind on the game as much as he can. He did joke. He said, at least I'm not going to expend all my energy in pregame warmups, which is what he tells the players, the seniors on senior day. You know, he was very good talking about, you know, how much the university and Duke basketball and Cameron all kind of brought each other up to a degree, you know, the symbiotic relationship there and how that's that arena became so integral to college basketball, you know, not just because they won a lot, but because they never screwed it up. They never moved into a bigger, more modern place. They kept the students down low. So that was good. You know, he talked about that. Talked about Tom Butters, who A, hired him, B, didn't fire him when people wanted to after 3 years. And then C, would not accept his resignation when K tried to resign after the back issues and mental issues in the mid-90s, in 95, 94, 95, I believe it was. K said he tendered his resignation. Butter's like, no, you're not resigning. So, you know, some perspective, some appreciation, certainly some humility. And then again, yes, the shot he took at Mark Emmert, Jeff Goodman asked him, you know, have you had any conversations with Mark Emmert? And he's like, well, yeah, but it's been a while. And in absolutely none of them did Emmert say, hey, Mike, what do you think we should do that's best for college basketball? And that's kind of always been a burr under his saddle of like that he hasn't been consulted, I guess. But I think on the other side of that is,
yeah,
you can force the conversation yourself. You know, Mike Krzyzewski, to a degree, has been pretty quiet in the last several years on a lot of the issues in the game.
Yeah, that. Yeah. I mean, do we really, every other school in the country, it'd be like the last thing we need is him asking Coach K what to do. So that might have been a good idea by Emmert not trying to pull that off. I watched a little of the press conference. You know, it's classic Krzyzewski. People ask me what's Coach K like, and you know, my standard answer is I have no idea. Because I mean, who really knows? But I will say what I think, and I've asked this of a number of former players and assistants of his. I always thought that Coach K is the general, right? Bob Knight got the nickname the general, but Bob Knight is emotional, enraged, flies off the handle.
Yeah.
A general is calculating, prepared, less emotional. Okay, and I'm not someone who disliked Bob Knight. I found him to be a fascinating guy and had a decent relationship with him. Bob Knight's your army. He's leading the army.
Yeah.
You're in a lot of trouble.
Yep.
Coach K is the one who went to West Point.
Right.
Okay. Like you did. Coaching at West Point is one thing. Going to West Point is a totally different thing. Like you go into West Point. He's the one who was the military sergeant. He's the one that I feel in any interaction he has, Mike Krzyzewski has planned out or is considering how I am going to win the interaction. However, that interaction must be done, whether it is intimidation of an official or somebody, or the most charming thing he could do, or the most convincing argument, or whatever it is. He's extremely good communicator in different ways. And you've seen it through the years at various times in press conferences. He can be one thing, and then he can be another thing, and he can do all that. And that's just all of him. And when he's with this, you know, you hear recruits like, man, when he was sitting in my living room, I never thought he could raise his voice. And then I got there.
Yeah.
No. And he's absolutely killing me. And it's you do know that he's a sergeant in the army. Like you get him, like literally, yeah, the drill sergeant. This is it. Yeah. Yeah. So and I just always found that. He may not
throw the chair like Bobby, but he'll use the same language as Bobby.
Yeah, and the discipline is so intense. You look at the program, the guy's still in phenomenal shape. Everybody around him has to be, right? All the different things. It's a very consistent discipline program, and that's one of the things that's made it last this long, where as good as Knight's programs could be and teams could be, the program itself was just like chaotic.
Yeah.
Because it was just like, who knows what's going on, right?
Right.
Krzyzewski could be a little bit of everything. So today was sort of that. It was like, he's going to reminisce. He's going to give you the good stuff today. But yeah, when all of a sudden it's like, I'm going to take a shot at Mark Emmert. Yeah, I'm going to take my shot at Mark Emmert.
Sure.
Yep. But do you really want Coach K as Mark Emmert's the voice on his shoulder? I don't think Mark Emmert asked anybody what he should do.
No.
Go to the bank twice a month.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that to me, that's all. Kay has been posturing for 10 years, maybe longer, I don't know, that, you know, basketball, as football continued to dwarf basketball in terms of decision-making, revenue, all those sorts of things, realignment specifically. You know, Kay was the guy who pushed back against that. I mean, I think he was the driving force behind Syracuse and Pittsburgh coming into the ACC because it was a better basketball move than it was a football move. And I think he wanted the ACC to champion its football more than its basketball, I'm sorry, more than its football. So, you know, he's kind of wanted to be that voice, but not so much the voice talking to Emmert about, hey, what do we do about the amount of cheating that's in the sport? What do we do? You know, because, hey, let's face it. They were getting the same players that Kentucky was trying to get and Arizona was getting and so on and so forth. Kansas, Louisville, all the programs that got caught up in that investigation. Before, during, and after, Duke was getting those guys. And they probably weren't getting them just because of the Cameron crazies. So I thought he came up a little bit quiet in that element of the state of the game. But I, you know, if you want anybody actually to talk some sense into Mark Emmert, there are plenty of people that could do it. I think Krzyzewski could have, but again, I think he's a little inconsistent in what he wanted to address.
I think one of the reasons, I mean, that's one of the reasons that he's done, we're celebrating him. What is it? 42 years?
42 years.
42 years. And he just won the ACC.
Yeah.
So there's the reason that you can do that is because he switched things up. You look at the, and it really went somewhat around when he got the Olympic job in 08 and 06 when he took over the Olympic job and then on from there. And he learned to be far more interested in he embraced the one and done. He embraced his inner Nike.
Yep.
He embraced everything that would go along with it.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at his players. There's a period, I think that the singular moment that everything changed for him, you could go whatever you want. You could say that 08 Olympics. In the fall of 09, he got Kyrie Irving to commit. Classic one and done. Not you go pre-08, and his great players were four, and the whole game was like this, but it was Leitner, Hurley, Battier, Brand, Ferry, Dawkins, J.J. Redick even, Jay Williams. Those guys are all, I believe every one of them stayed at least 3 years.
Did
maybe
Brand?
Not Elton Brand.
Might have been two. Elton Brand
might be two. I think he is two. Elton Brand went at two. But it was not one and done. Sheldon Williams, right? He had a lot of, then all of a sudden, it's Kyrie, who actually barely even played for him. But then it's Jabari Parker and Okafor and Bagley and Barrett and Zion and all the other guys. He flipped the switch, and he was willing to switch and go, I'm taking these guys. And they became the dominant one-and-done team, even more than Kentucky, who Calipari's whole career was built on that age limit. I mean, that was the greatest, because before he was getting all those recruits, and then he was in Memphis, they were just leaving. You know, he had Kendrick Perkins and guys like that, and then they just all left before he could even coach him. And then all of a sudden, the one and done, bang, he started getting everybody. And then Kay came in and started taking him. And whatever you got to do to get it done, I mean, I could care less. But all of a sudden, he switched about 08. And so here we are 14 years later, at least 12 to 13 since Kyrie commitment. And they can win the national title. He could go out on top. He's at least going out with an ACC regular season title, which I don't think he's won since 05, yeah, right?
It's been a long time. I know
16 years. So, and in some ways, it's a greater sign of how good your team is when you can win your conference title than win the – there's an element of greatness that goes with winning a regular season conference title.
Right. It's hard to luck into one of those. You know,
you don't luck into it. You don't get hot. You don't get hot right. And just win the ACC. You got to win it. And he did it. And so that's one of the things that to me was it was like he went from the epitome of the 4-year guy, the long term guy, to all of a sudden it's rent a star. And that's fine. And he learned how to coach him.
Yeah.
And he did great. And he coached that Olympic team and rode that. I'm Kobe's coach. I mean, some of the advantages he had. I remember being at a Nike event at the LeBron James camp down in Akron. LeBron had a talent camp. They were calling like the Nike camp that are LeBron camp that year. Maybe they still do. I don't know. Nike's right. LeBron skills.
Yeah,
they're
putting the names of all their flagship guys on their camps. Yeah.
And Kay's sitting there, and I was actually sitting next to him, and LeBron is there. He comes running over, climbs up the bleachers, and it's like, hey, coach, what's up? Because he's his national team coach, and he sits there and talks to him for 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And all the kids are there watching. And it's like, I'm like, oh, every other coach in the country's throwing daggers at Kay. Like,
they're punching air right now.
Oh, yeah. Jesus. Criminy. Damn, LeBron is kissing the ring of Coach K. And that we're all trying to recruit these kids. And that was so huge. And then he stuck on, right? He took the 06 job, the 08. And then this is what kind of ended a tumultuous, wild relationship with Bob Knight, is Knight got really upset and thought, you coach the Olympics once and you give it to the next guy. That's the right way to do it. And that's how it should be done. And Kay hung on for two more Olympics and rode that to extreme prominence with the new guys. And Kay felt that was Knight felt that was disrespectful to the Henry Ibas and all those great coaches before him who would only do one time. So that to me was one of his best things. And again, this is why Krzyzewski's the general. It's like, this tactic isn't quite working right now. Well, hell, come on down, Kyrie. You're a little nuts, but yeah. We'll deal with you. Sure. You know, we'll figure it out. You can play. Let's go. And he figured out how to coach those teams.
Yeah. No, he did. And I mean, there were a couple different inflection points where I think you can go back and see where he changed tactics for sure. And by the way, 06 was the last time they won the outright ACC title. That was a really good team that lost to UConn in the, 06, that might have been. Anyway, so in the late 90s, is when, okay, he's coming back. They win the title, 91-92. They are by far the best program in America from 86 through 92. Really through 94. They make a championship game there with Grant Hill. And then Krzyzewski has the back issue, sits out the season. Mentally, he's shot. Comes back, gets the program back going, but it hasn't really elevated fully. And so, hey, we better go get some guys, including Corey Maggette and Chris Duhon. And okay, so there was some stuff with those guys, right? I mean, Corey Maggette's recruitment, you know about very well. You wrote about it. I wrote about it.
You know.
Yeah.
And Quinn Snyder is his assistant too.
And Quinn Snyder is an assistant.
Quinn was trying to update the offense, like everything. Quinn was trying to update everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
So and Quinn's turned out to be an incredible coach of his own once he got to the NBA.
He's found where he should be.
Phenomenal coach. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, Chris Duhon's mom moved from Slidell, Louisiana to Durham. And that was the first one of those like, maybe Duke's doing things that everybody else is doing too. And a little bit of an eye opener there. And then, the next big evolution. And again, after you win the title in 01, but then you're not quite getting there. Well, let's try to do something different. And then all of a sudden now you're embracing one and done and you're bringing those guys in. You win the 2015 title. Very much driven by one and done guys, Jahlil Okafor and Justice Winslow on that team. And you play zone defense. I mean, you know, they did a lot of stuff different. And now, again, he does have a chance to go out on top, which would make for an incredible storyline this tournament. The way they are playing right now, and Kay made reference to it, they are playing extremely well, which is why I would lay the points Saturday against a not very good North Carolina team.
I think it's just going to be overwhelmed. I mean, can you imagine having to play and all those guys sitting? Ooh. They're all going to sit behind the bench.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to look up at like a Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
This is the second greatest collection of like, other than that's the NBA All-Star game where they've trotted out everybody.
Right.
Like God, how intimidating was that with all these guys courtside? You're like, oh, Jesus, look at these guys. Kay, so how much do you think, because this is one of the reasons that Duke was popular and unpopular, how much was Kay trying to claim he was better and how much was it just this media that would just fawn over the program? I mean, I remember there was a SI article in college basketball had like just, it was very Duke-centric in like their reporters and stuff even. Like there was an oversized
women's basketball right now, right? There's a lot of South Carolina fans that are mad that like,
UConn, right. Well, I mean, Duke's got, Seth Davis didn't play there and somehow he became I don't know. He went to school there, right? But it's like, we'll take that guy. We'll put him on CBS. But I remember there was an SI article literally about Mike Krzyzewski. And I just remember the headline. I remember not even really understanding it all at the time, but thinking, wow, this is a lot. And they called him Blue Angel instead of Blue Devil. And then Dickie V and all the different people. And yeah, I think Kay's presence, he accomplished it. But I remember when I was covering a lot of AAU basketball and I was involved in all that stuff. And when I covered college basketball all the time and people go, well, there's never anything at Duke. And I'm like, well, did you ever look? Because But Kay was the one who would praise UNLV and Jerry Tarkanian and say and try to tamp that down at times.
Right. I think he was.
It's all gray hats.
Yeah. Yeah. Now that's he's again smart, calculating, and probably knows what's in the closet to a degree. And so, yeah, look, if you go back, you want to see kind of the genesis of the media adoration of Duke. You can absolutely look at Sports Illustrated and, you know, Kirk Kirkpatrick, who went to North Carolina but loved everything in the triangle. Alex Wolf wrote very highly of Duke and Coach K. John Feinstein, for a long time, probably the most influential writer in college basketball, went to Duke and carried, you know, a big opinionated hammer. And I think absolutely championed Krzyzewski and the way they did things.
John's a lot of fun.
No, he's great.
I'll say this. John carries a huge hammer, and he did have to do a lot for Duke, but he's a lot of fun.
Fantastic.
You hate him or love his column.
Yeah, I am not criticizing any of the people I have mentioned. That's for sure. Those are all great sports writers.
But it was very, very Duke is the good guys.
Yep.
Everyone else is the bad guys.
Yep. So you're taking – Feinstein takes it up to a point, and then what happens? ESPN comes along and Dookie V, Dick Vitale. Don't underestimate the value of having Dick Vitale singing your praises three times a week.
Duke type of dandies.
Every night. Yeah. And everybody else.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But, and like you said, they hire it is UConn women's basketball dominates the women's. Every time you turn on, it's like three UConn women basketball players on ESPN talking about
it. Right. And that's the thing. Jay Billis, who's the foremost analyst right now, he played on the 86 team. He was an assistant to Kay.
Jay Williams is on ESPN.
Carlos Boozer's on the ACC network. I mean,
And where's the Kentucky?
Right.
The UConn. UConn, how many? They won what? Four titles?
Yeah. Four titles.
Four titles since Kay's 99. Won five. Yeah, I don't see all those guys on there, do they? I'm not paying enough attention to who's talking on ESPN, but
no, they're not.
Right? Where are those guys?
Yep.
And it was always this perspective, and that would probably bother me the most when I really covered college basketball was that. And it would just be like, well, Duke does it the right way. And it was a lot of people who had no idea, who never actually looked at, I don't buy that term. First off, I hated the term.
Yeah.
But the right way. But it was a lot of like broadcasters and like, you know, like, well, I'm over there all the time. I don't see anything.
Broadcasters wouldn't know where to look or how. They sure didn't want to. It's so ridiculous.
Yeah. Right. And so the other teams were the threats, right?
Yeah.
Bob Huggins at Cincinnati. That's a threat. That's right. Whatever Calipari's got cooking, Calhoun, all these other guys were, well, they're doing this. They're doing. Yeah. I think that's what turned a lot of people off was too much. I will give Kay credit that I don't know whether he played that much into it. Maybe I'm forgetting some of it.
I don't think Kay really embraced, holier than thou. I mean, he championed their academics and all that stuff, and
which is fine.
Yeah,
but he certainly was good with like when they played UNLV. He was very clear that this is not what this should be.
Right. Yep.
I've also always appreciated before games if you listen to him. And even after he'll talk a lot about how good the other players are on the teams.
Well, yeah, I was going to get to that here just real quick.
Go ahead.
The one other thing I want to mention, I mean, you know, the perceived ESPN bias in favor of Duke it's more than just a perception. We just named off all those people that are involved in broadcasting Duke games, but little birdie tells me that George Bodenheimer himself will be in Cameron Indoor Stadium. That's the head of ESPN, right? That's the head of Disney. That's the head of the whole thing. He's coming to the game. There's a little bit of a cozy relationship there.
Mickey Mouse's best friend, basically.
Yeah. I mean, Kay made him a lot of money. They got a lot of good games.
But
if you're Duke, you ride it, man. You're like, you want to hire Mike?
You absolutely ride the hell out of it. But just the relationship exists. All right, it's there.
It's definitely interesting. It's like how many Michigan State players are broadcasting?
Can't think of one. We'll wait for Draymond to retire.
But he'll do NBA.
Yeah.
But yeah, like it's very, and it, you know, it's just a very, there's a lot of really good programs. And it's just like, okay. But yeah, there is definitely that. And I think that that pushed a lot of it. People just got tired of it. What I would say at this point, as we enter the last thing, and Duke's been fun to hate, they're a good villain. They're good heroes, right? They're consistently there. And Kay does just enough stuff that makes you angry and all that. But then there's times when the teams are just so much fun. I mean, that Zion Williamson team was so that team was so much fun to watch. They end up losing in the Elite Eight. But
yeah, but they did a lot to rejuvenate college
RJ
basketball.
Barrett. Yeah, they had everybody. Yeah. And it was just so much fun. And just like Kay's always been very pro player. He's always been good about the other team's players and coaches. He really takes time and especially when he can. He can be very, very gracious in victory. Occasionally gracious in defeat, although not always. But mainly, like, it's just a constant. Like, I don't really recall college hoops before Mike Krzyzewski.
Yeah. I do, because I'm older than you are. But still, like, the one I remember watching John Wooden's teams for about 2 years. And yeah, retiring when I was, like, 10. But then there's been nobody since that even comparable other than Mike Krzyzewski and his complete dominance of it. But
wherever he went the last 30-something years, sell out, big, you know, unbelievable. Kay's coming. Duke's coming. I don't care. You know, he wouldn't go to too many road games. But, you know, the Big Ten ACC challenge would make him come to different places. And it would be the biggest ticket in years. And everyone's excited. So,
well, that, 92 Philadelphia when they played Kentucky in that game. And I covered that regional. When they had their open practice, that was the first time I up close saw rock star treatment for a college basketball team. I mean, flashbulbs, screaming women, everything. And it was, Duke was so big. They were the defending champions, and they were number one every single week of that year, 91-92. And they go rolling into Philly, and the place was just going crazy. And a lot of it was Leitner. I mean, Leitner, you know, movie star looks, persona that you either loved or hated. And I think Leitner drove the lightning rod perception of the whole program. Like, after him, there was a lot of people that were like, maybe Duke's kind of got some real snots there, you know?
He's had some players like that there, you know, Grayson Allen.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
there's been some guys.
No, but that's
slap the floor. We always play defense because we slap the floor. Like, right. You don't need to slap the floor to play defense. There's plenty. I'm trying to be positive here, Pat. Trying Lightning. To be positive. No.
Yes. But no.
I like Mike Krzyzewski. He's always been phenomenal with me. So that's all I care about.
It's definitely one of my favorite plays in sports when a defense slaps the floor and then gives up a bucket.
And then, gives up a blow-by, turnstile layup. But, that was real quick, my favorite Krzyzewski moment. And he's been great with me. I've had some phenomenal conversations with him. But favorite Krzyzewski moment was after they beat Kentucky in that game. And he was the most, like, over-the-top gracious to Kentucky because I think he legitimately respected everything that they poured into that game and knew how close it was to who was going to win. And Krzyzewski, you know, like consoling Richie Farmer on the floor in the Spectrum. I'm there, I'm covering the game. It's right in front of me, you know, and he's like consoling all these Kentucky guys. And then he goes over and gets on the Kentucky radio broadcast with Caywood Ledford, the legendary radio broadcaster who's signing off on his last game. And Mike's like, hey, can I say a word? And they give him the headset. And he's like, I just want to tell the Kentucky fans how great their team was. I mean, and just like went out of his way to praise them. I thought that was extreme class. Now, yes, it's easier to do when you win, of course. And I've seen him be pretty darn classy in defeat, too. As you said, not all the time. He's had some snippy moments.
But he's gone and after losses, like gone to opposing locker rooms, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, I think for the most part, he respects the honor of the game, if that's not too highfalutin a word for it. But he was just so good after winning that game, and he appreciated, and I think he still appreciates that as probably the best game he's been part of.
Here's another one that I'll just real quickly, that like this is why coaches love this guy. And I just looked this up because I thought I had heard this story. Henry Iva died in 2000, or let me see, what year did he die? You know, the great Oklahoma A&M coach, 1993, January 15th, 1993. Henry Iba dies, Olympic coach, 88 years old, real, you know, one of these ginormous figures in basketball, college basketball.
One of the big figures in the sport.
One of the first big figures. In the middle of that season, they have the funeral, and Mike Krzyzewski flies in from Duke to go.
Wow.
He's not a former player of Henry Ibas. He just came to honor him. And he flew in and, you know, obviously flies in, flies out, right? But whatever. He goes all the way to Oklahoma, to Stillwater, Oklahoma, or wherever the funeral was, to honor this guy. And there's a million of those things that make people go, like, right, it's the story you just told to Kentucky fans that it's top of mind to honor this old broadcaster in Kentucky.
Right.
It's exactly. Top of mind for me to go honor someone in Oklahoma. I'm going to stand up for the UNLV players in a time of when this is unfair and I don't feel comfortable with this, that wins over a segment of fan bases that go, you know what? When that guy stood up at a really, like, that was really cool. That was really classy.
Absolutely.
And that, you know, I mean, look, in the middle of the 1993 season, you know, I need to go to send flowers, right?
Right. Yeah.
But he didn't. So, I just looked it up. He was there, according to Oklahoman. Very quickly, CBS Sports put out the list of the, I guess he's had 200-something players. Thought it would be more. More than 200 players have come through the Duke program. I thought it would be more. Yeah, they compiled the top 42. Okay, I will give. Can you name your top five?
Okay.
This is according to Matt Norlander and company over at CBS.
Right.
Your top five Duke Blue Devils of all time under K. And I'll tell you where they actually rank according to this.
So this is their play at Duke.
Duke only.
All right.
So Kyrie didn't go to make it because Kyrie barely played.
Five games, I think it was.
Yeah.
In a Duke uniform. All right. All right. Let's go. All right. Let's go with that. All right. Here's who I got. Ready?
Yep.
Christian Laettner.
Number one. Yes.
Yep.
They have him as number one.
Got to be. Absolute no brainer. Grant Hill.
He is number two on their list.
All right. Number three, Bobby Hurley.
They have Bobby Hurley at number 10. So,
what?
Yeah.
Come on. My fourth one, Jay Williams.
Jay Williams, they have at number three.
Okay. All right.
I mean, they were three. Yeah. I mean, he was great.
Yeah.
Jay Williams is a dominant player.
All right. He was outstanding. 2001, 2002, both those seasons.
One more guess.
Yep. Danny Ferry.
Danny Ferry is number seven.
Okay.
Here's the top 10. Hurley, Battier at 9, Elton Brand at 8, Ferry at 7, Johnny Dawkins at 6.
Mm.
Won the Naismith Player of the Year Award. Okay. Yeah. JJ Redick at 5.
Yeah. Okay.
A lot of points. Zion at 4.
Oh, yeah. You know what? Gosh, I frankly forgot
about
Zion.
Played 1 year.
Yeah.
But good God.
Yeah. I forgot about Zion. I feel bad about that.
Everyone's forgotten about Zion. That's the problem.
Yeah, right, yeah. Nobody's seen Zion for months.
Where's Ja Morant? Yeah. Number three, Jay Williams. Number two, Grant Hill. Number one, Laettner. Okay.
So that's a good list. I mean, I think Bobby Hurley's way too low at 10, but I can't really quibble otherwise. Redick was really good and one of those guys people really hated, although... And he played into that a little bit. He would throw the hands up when he made big shots and that sort of thing. But really an interesting guy from an interesting family, from a hippie family in like the woods of Virginia. Yeah.
And he had Roanoke.
JJ had a couple tattoos on his ribs. I went and did a big story about him. And I asked his mother did not approve. This was 2005, you know, and people were up in arms about that sort of thing.
Tab 40, trying to cause family strife in the Redick house.
I went to P.F. Chang's with the Redick family and asked him, I said, what do you think of the tattoos? And his mom shakes her head and said, it's a permanent expression of a temporary emotion.
That's very true. Yeah. Very true.
It's a good parent line. Keep that in mind with your daughters.
I don't know where I saw one of those. It was like some line I heard a long time ago. It was like someone got some Chinese lettering on a tattoo and they're like, what is that? What does the Chinese lettering mean? And it's like 19 drunk and in Cancun. That was right.
Beautiful.
I believe that's the translation. Yeah. I mean, they have a son who is an All-American at Duke University en route to a 20-year NBA career. He's got a huge future in media. He's intelligent, interesting, in four, like, it's just terrific. And Pat, you're in there throwing bombs, trying. Well, he's got these tattoos, Mom.
It's 2005, but at that point, hardly any of those things were true. He'd been a very good college player. None of the rest of it was true.
What a jerk you were! What a jerk!
Yeah, you JJ Redick was. You wouldn't ask the question.
He was going to do fine no matter what. And you're trying to get him in trouble with his mother. I'm
trying to turn him into Marshall Henderson over here.
Pat Forty is a jerk.
Yeah.
Go to PF Chang's and you try to stir stuff up. I hope the tattoos have not held JJ back.
I don't think they have. I think he's okay.
When were you looking at his ribs anyway?
It was like in the locker room, you know? I mean,
oh, geez.
There you go.
He's terrible. You're a terrible.
He wasn't hiding them from anybody.
All right. That concludes our Duke coverage.
Good Duke chat.
That was a good Duke chat. That was longer than I anticipated. So this pod's going to go a little long because I don't think we're getting in and out of this discussion quickly.
No
easy way to transition to this. Your employer, Sports Illustrated, Pat, had an interview released Thursday by Robert Sanchez. Very fascinating story. About Leah Thomas, Penn swimmer, transgender swimmer. We have discussed this in the past some. We broke news when we released the Brooke Forty statement. I was glad we didn't get scooped on that one.
It would have been bad if we got scooped on that.
It would have been bad, but so at least we got that. Good job. You locked down that source. And we're 2 weeks out, less than 2 weeks, I think, to the NCAA swimming championships. This story is going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. Pat, I will try to spare you from like making news here because you're kind of in a tough spot.
Yeah.
So you don't have to answer
Swim
whatever.
Swim is listening.
I will not be like you and the Reddicks and try to grill you. This will be soft. My opinion is I am not a cultural warrior. I don't personally don't really care. I find these things more fascinating than anything else. I just find people who are obsessed with politics and culture are the most miserable people in our country, no matter which side of the fence they are on.
Yep.
They wake up every day looking to get offended. If Brooke Forty was not in the swimming pool at that championships, I'd really not care at all what happened in that swimming pool. But I do a little. But this is a fascinating story. Do you have a general thoughts on the story that came out? This is basically her first comments about what's gone on. Leah has stayed incredibly quiet publicly as all hell has broken up over Leah's presence in the swimming pool.
Yes. I thought it was a great story. Robert Sanchez did an excellent job with it. I think it was thoughtfully written, edited, presented. It is an exclusive interview with her. She had done some podcast stuff with Swim Swam, but really not since this became a cause celeb had she talked to anybody. And so she did talk to us and, you know, kind of laid out her thought process and physical process to a degree of transitioning. And, you know, that she wanted to still swim and the ripples from that and the people who are angry about it and the people who are supporting her and how it has really fractured the Penn team in a large manner. In addition to
fracturing. Yeah, that includes her own teammates. That was like...
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The parents, the teammates, there was an estimation in the article that there are 37 women swimmers on the Penn team. How many of them actually get in the pool?
Well, that's a lot. That is a big, big number. You know,
Varsity Blues. This is the set asides for the rich kids. Yeah. These programs shouldn't exist.
Well, hey, settle down. No,
man, there's 37 kids. How many of them would have gotten in without being good swimmers? There's a lot of kids who studied their ass off and they aren't swimmers.
Well,
37?
Maybe they're all swimming really, across. Really good students. I don't know.
It's a lot of swimmers.
Yeah, it is a lot. It's a very high number. I mean, Stanford's team is, I think, like 22, which is on the smaller side, but still, if you're over 30, I don't know what you do with them all.
Attention, FBI.
it's fractured the team, it's fractured the swimming community, it's fractured anybody who's cared to comment on this.
37, 6 to 8 are on Leah's side, half of the team, so 13 more are against, and the rest just don't care or they're just freshmen that aren't going to say a word. They're just like, get me through this.
Right. Well, I do feel sorry for the ones who were just kind of caught up in this maelstrom, you know? I mean, this was not of their making, but it has engulfed their season. There's no doubt about it. So
what did you learn as a swimming expert? You as the College Football Inquirer swimming expert, what did you learn from this story? It's a very interesting story, whether you're outraged or supportive.
Yeah.
Or somewhere in the middle like me trying to figure out what the hell this is all about. So
from a swimming standpoint, I didn't learn anything. I know this, that I watched Leah swim on the laptop for the first time at the Ivy League Championships. And, you know, her greatest attributes are size and strength. That comes with having been a biological man. If anybody wants to deny that, you're not dealing in reality. So
the form is not overly impressive.
I wouldn't say her stroke is textbook. No, I wouldn't say that, you know, it's some, you know, great triumph of biomechanics or anything like that, that you've mastered freestyle. I just think that she's bigger, faster, moves efficiently through the water, mostly thanks to that. So
this is the issue here, obviously, is that the hormone levels, the treatment that Leah took to transition is within the lines of what had been set. But
yes,
those probably need to be updated. USA Swimming came, NCAA kicked it over to USA Swimming. USA Swimming said you have to be under this limit for 36 months. Leah's at 34. They kicked it back to basically the NCAA had their chance out, but they instead said no. I'll read it. USA Swimming officials say Thomas' eligibility played no role in its decision making. They had been working on this. Less than 2 weeks later, the NCAA seemingly cleared the way for Thomas to swim, citing unfair and potentially detrimental impacts of a late-term rule change. So they recommended delaying a decision on whether to implement the swimming guidelines.
Right.
That is classic NCAA cop-out. Delaying it is allowing it.
Yeah. Well,
potentially detrimental. Like what?
Yeah.
They suspend teams in the middle of the season from NCAA competition.
They're handling
of course, that's a rule breaking.
This has been the NCAA at its quintessential best/worst. Is that they had outdated rules and they were too scared to update them, and so they kicked it to USA Swimming, and USA Swimming's like, well, this is what we think it should be, and they're like, oh no, we can't do that now. So yeah, so I personally think it was too late in the game to change the rules on Leah. I mean, she entered this season with this set of rules to be eligible to swim. She met those expectations. She should be able to swim. Now, you can fault the rules because I do think they were outdated, and I do think they have created a non-level playing field, but I don't sit there and blame her. Don't blame the player. Blame the game.
That's fair, and Leah has done everything that has been required. So I think that's an important part of this. Leah's main quote, I just want to show trans kids and younger trans athletes they're not alone. They don't have to choose between who they are and the sport they love. It's a nice ideal. I don't know how that's how the real world works. It's working on this case. I think every right-minded person or fair-minded person wants kids that are struggling with this to feel less struggle. There's too many suicides, too many drugs, just too much depression, too much. But I don't believe this should be a yes or no on that. I think there you can be in support of that and still say what's going on here. This is a swim meet. It's just such a tricky thing. I think unfortunately there's too many people that just are straight up like against this or just going crazy over this. For reasons that are not genuine on trying to keep the sanctity of sport. There's a bigotry wing to this. But there's still a reasonable one, right? Like, here's a Penn parent talking to SI. This is anonymous because they don't want to put their name to it because they're going to get crushed. We support Leah as a trans woman and hope she lives a happy and productive life because that's what she deserves. What we can't do is stand by while she rewrites records, eliminates biological women from the sport. If we don't speak up here, it's going to happen in college after college, and women's sports as we know it will no longer exist in this country. Here's another one. I mean, Leah is a human being, deserves to be treated with respect and dignity, but it's not transphobic to say I disagree with where she's swimming.
I hear those people loud and clear, and there is room for that. If you have a problem or a qualm with her competing in the NCAA Women's Swimming Championships, it does not make you anti-trans. Let's be clear about that. Which they're, if people, as you said, want to paint this very black, very white, you know, you're wrong. Okay, on both sides of it, you are absolutely incorrect. And there's so many people that don't know diddly about what they're talking about that have now started to sound off and act like they know, and they don't know quite frankly.
Well, that's America. I mean, you know.
Yeah, no.
The more people are telling me how to wage a land war in Ukraine all of a sudden, like they spent, like, okay. Maybe you should put that in the suggestion box.
Yeah.
When did you become a Ukrainian invasion expert? Myself, I knew one city in Ukraine 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I said it wrong. I didn't say it right. Anyway, yeah, that's just, American arrogance is phenomenal on these things. I don't know. Here is the part that made me, it's just stood out. Let's describe it that way. Thomas, those arguments basically saying that argument is disingenuous to Thomas. There is no such thing as half support. Either you back her fully as a woman or you don't. The very simple answer is a quote. The very simple answer is, I am not a man. I am a woman, so I belong on the woman's team. Trans people deserve the same respect every other athlete gets. And I think that's the issue. There's no wiggle room here. And I think it's very fair to sit there and say, okay, this is why this story just absolutely fascinates me on what's going to happen and everyone arguing. Because you can,
yeah.
I mean, clearly Leah Thomas has to understand, like, she was a very good swimmer as a male, and now all of a sudden she's crushing everybody. She can't, there's no way you could be like purposely just unaware and be like, gee, I wonder if it's because I used to be a male.
Yeah. And because, yeah, I'm 6 foot I'm taller. However tall she is. Yeah.
I got bigger hands, bigger lungs. I mean, like, come on. Like, I'm not going to tell Leah Thomas what to say, but it would be like a little bit of like, look, I understand that this is a tricky situation. I'm just trying to do my best. But this is what makes it interesting.
Right.
Leah Thomas is not backing down on this.
No, not at all. And, you know, she will go into the NCAA championships in 2 weeks as the number one seed in two events, in the 200 freestyle and in the 500 freestyle. In the 500, she will swim in the preliminaries next to my daughter. And then we'll see if they swim against each other again that night. Hopefully my kid advances. I mean, I don't wish anything against Leah either. But, you know, we'll see how that all goes down. But where the swimming community gets twitchy about this is, if you watch, I don't think she was giving 100% effort at the Ivy League championships. And if she has a lot more in the tank, then she will threaten records that are held, NCAA records that are held by some of the most famous and beloved female Olympians America's ever seen. Missy Franklin, the 200 freestyle, Katie Ledecky in the 500. I don't think she can get close to Katie, but Missy's absolutely could be in jeopardy. Those records go down, and you're going to watch the swimming community get wild.
It's going to be crazy. 2 weeks. Swimming championships are going to be crazy.
Hey, people are going to pay attention for the first time. Welcome in, like everyone.
It's just a really interesting story. Here's the other quote that really stood out to me, and I think is super important. And this is from Leah's dad, Bob. And when first, just this whole process, I guess, but when first was told that, about the transitioning, we will do everything and anything we need to do to have Leah be part of this family. We're not going to lose her. And that hit me because it's like, he understood, like, too many of these end in suicide.
Yeah.
Many of these end in really, really bad situations. So you can see a father saying, hell, well, this is what we got to do. How do you balance that and all the other ones with, that's great, we want to support you, but
right,
women swimming needs to be women swimming until they figure out how to better regulate this or determine it. This isn't really a fair swim.
That's the crux of the tension of this. And I will again refer back to my daughter's statement, which was first heard on this podcast, where, you know, at the end of it, she said, I will have no problems racing against Leah. She said, person's dignity and respect is more important than any trophy or any record. And I think that should resonate as the bottom line here, because a lot of the people that are really upset about this don't have any actual skin in the game. This is all just a political wedge issue.
Right. But some other swimmers are going to say something else. So sure. It goes, but yeah. You know, I respect that Brooke is that mature, right? But you know, and right now you have one Leah Thomas. What if there's eight and that's the final?
I know. And that's the what if, but that's, I'm glad you brought that there. Up because
right. We're not.
The extreme that some people are taking this to that I think is illogical is, what if somebody has a full basketball team of five guys who are pretending to be women? People aren't rushing out to do this so they can win a basketball game.
No,
people
they're not
doing this so that they can win a swim race. They're not going to do this so they can hit a softball farther. This is not about athletic competition. This is about what somebody wants their identity to be. And it's not an easy road to go down this.
I don't nobody's think choosing this.
Nobody's going out there to say, I'm going to pretend I'm a girl so I can win me some ribbons and medals. No, right. That's not the mentality here.
Yeah, it's. I don't know. We'll see. It's going to be a big story next couple of weeks, and we'll keep discussing it. More importantly, though, Reddit feed.
Yes.
Chicken restaurant chains if they were SEC teams. Let's get to the important stuff.
Let's get to the wheelhouse topics. Yeah.
Yes, chicken. Okay, enough with the serious stuff.
Yeah.
What if chicken restaurant chains were SEC teams? This is from Darmuck85. You are on your game, whoever you are, Darmuck85.
Tip of the cap. This is beautiful.
Good thinking. Well, I'm glad you asked. Georgia is Chick-fil-A. Georgia is Chick-fil-A.
Yeah.
Obviously, very, very big in Atlanta. Atlanta-based, I believe. They deliver a quality product, but their fans are strangely cultish and won't shut up about how good it is.
See, I don't know. I personally would put Alabama as Chick-fil-A, but...
I kind of.
But who won the last natty? You got to give it to them.
They won the last natty, but the established brand in the South is both Chick-fil-A and Alabama.
I kind of wait till you get to the next one. Alabama says it's Raisin Cane's. It's a solid
hold on.
Choice.
Don't. Okay. You come on. Us. What are you doing, Sully?
Okay, this is. I'm too excited.
You're gonna start slipping in Tennessee basketball talk again.
No, I'm not. This is way better than Tennessee basketball.
Can you now? I mean, we've discussed like many Coach K stories, and in the hot topic of American sport, and you want to get Tennessee basketball number 15.
Well, they're gonna be way higher than that. The number 13. They beat before they beat Auburn.
All right, Alabama is Raising Cane's. Chick-fil-A finished with you either love it or hate it, or you're close to someone who loves it and you pretend to love it for your own safety. Chick-fil-A is very, very good. I just don't think it's as good as Popeyes. I just like Popeyes.
Yeah. See, Popeyes.
It's not that good. It's very good though. I
agree with Alabama's Raising Cane's though, for one, because they have the best tenders in the game, and that's all they do. They're boring. They have the boring uniforms like Alabama, but they just get the damn thing done, man. You don't know how they do it, but they do it.
It's a solid choice, if kind of boring compared to the other choices. This is the thing. They only do one thing, but they're pretty good at it. Pretty good. Alabama is excellent at it.
That's the thing.
No, they're the best, in my opinion.
Yeah. I think Raising Cane's is an insult to Alabama.
I agree.
It's too low.
I'm tearing apart this whole thing.
I don't like the Raising Cane's thing. All right, next one. Ole Miss. Ole Miss is Zaxby's. They want to be Raising Cane's so damn bad. That is true. They try to spice things up, but at the end, they're falling a little short when compared to the other restaurants. I did not know Zaxby's. Ole Miss wants to be Alabama. I did not know Zaxby's had like was you know, pined to be Raising Cane's.
They have a bigger menu, so I think they're a little more versatile.
How many Raising Cane's are there? Are there enough of them for this?
There's a lot. They're out here in LA now, so there's a bunch.
Yeah. See, my theory, too. See, I say you flip them. Bama is Chick-fil-A. Georgia is Raising Cane's. Because, again, it's not quite as big in terms of being established, but it's getting bigger. And Stetson Bennett worked the drive-through window a couple of days after winning the national championship at the Raising Cane's in Athens.
Well, there's that. 600 Raising Cane's. There's 941 Zaxby's.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So Yeah, the Z and the Zach sauce is everywhere. It flows through America. So take that. This list, well, I think we can do a better job. All right. Auburn is Bojangles. It's Bo time, baby.
Okay.
First off, Bojangles. Right. Plus, very good write-up. It's always a 50-50 toss-up if it'll end up edible or already cold. and just hilariously bad and probably can't be legally considered food. We all know people who love Bojangles. We're just not sure why. Fair enough. There are like this. There is a group that just loves their Bo. They love their Bojangles. And it is a little bit like that. You felt okay. Okay.
Every once in a while, you get a Boberry biscuit and it hits just right. Just like Cam Newton. You know, you get that one Boberry biscuit. That's awesome. And you're like, all right, I can see it.
The Boberry biscuit is Cam Newton. I love it.
Okay. Florida is KFC. Mm. I know this guy writes KFC or woman. I don't know. KFC should be Kentucky. No, shut up and hear me out. KFC is Florida. Here's why. They used to be good. Now they have no idea what the hell they're doing, and neither do we have no idea what the hell they're doing, and neither do they.
Like, yeah, there's a lot of combos with Taco Bell, and they're trying to do too many things.
They're all over. They're in China. Yeah, they're everywhere.
They're killing it in China.
Yeah,
I mean,
they are
killing it in China. KFC, let me see it. The KFC's got a lot of, it is kind of Florida. It's everywhere. It dominates. It punched 24,000 locations.
I do have to say, covering the Beijing Olympics in 2008, I was having some, you know, strained conversation with somebody who knew a little bit of English. And they said, where are you from? I said, Kentucky. And they go, oh, chicken. And then they were asking me if Colonel Sanders is
real
Asian. No, if he's Asian, because his eyes look small on the bucket. And I'm like, no, he's Corbin, Kentucky, man.
He might be.
Yeah, I don't think so.
KFC has 7,900 in China. The great Steve Politti at the 2008 Olympics wrote that Colonel Sanders kicked General Tao's ass because there's no General Tao chicken.
General Tso.
Dominant in China. Okay. Yeah, yeah. That's the Gators. They're trying something else. All right. LSU, Popeyes.
Yeah, had to be, right?
Kind of scary, kind of good, and the people who love it never shut up about it.
Yeah.
They have a huge hit, and then they're terrible again. I mean, they literally created the best sandwich, set off the chicken sandwich war, but then ran out of chicken. It's like a Russian supply line.
That's a very LSU thing there, yeah.
Vlad Putin's favorite is we ran out of chickens for the chicken. We tried to wage a chicken war, and we ran out of chicken. There's a lot about it that just doesn't quite make sense. That is true. Who knows what's going on at Popeyes? Yep. All right. Next, Texas A&M, Wingstop. Texas A&M is Wingstop. Yeah, it's pretty good, but it feels like it's too expensive for what you actually get. It's about halfway through the meal, you notice the food isn't quite as good as you thought, and there's some strange man in the corner that's been staring at you the whole time.
That is Wingstop.
That's a good kicker line there.
Yeah. Yeah. Not bad. Okay. Arkansas. Arkansas is Church's Chicken.
Mm.
You've only eaten there once and it was actually kind of good, but you'll never be in that exact airport again on a Sunday night after all the other restaurants have closed for the night. So you probably never eat it again. Not bad. Not bad. All right. We'll see how they do here. We're getting deep. South Carolina, Chester Fried Chicken.
Oh, gosh.
Chester Fried Chicken. You've like seen it advertised.
The last three I have never eaten at, so.
Okay. You've seen it advertised on the gas station window. It could be good if it was sold somewhere else. Admittedly, you're hungry. It might actually be fried chicken, but then again, why take the risk? That's the South Carolina program. I'm not totally inaccurate. Mississippi State is Buffalo Wild Wings.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone knows that one person who won't shut up about it. The highs are high. The lows are, well, pretty stinking low. I think it's just wild and zany. But in the end, you'll remember is leaving with a headache and praying you don't have diarrhea tomorrow. God, the guy really doesn't like Buffalo Wild Wings. All right.
See, I would have put Buffalo Wild Wings as Tennessee, personally.
I agree.
Yeah.
Tennessee. I'll jump to Tennessee. Okay. Tennessee is Hardee's Carl Jr.'s.
Oh, my.
You've heard the rumors that it was once known as a chicken restaurant and that it was pretty good, too. That being said, no one was actually around to remember when it was either of those things.
Yeah, it's true. Now they're burgers and it's...
Yeah, it's kind of true.
But yeah, Hardee's a chicken? I think Buffalo Wild Wings is Tennessee because it's always just a shit show when you go in there, right?
Well,
it's just
You can get
The tables aren't bust. And, yeah.
The floor is slippery.
The beer, it's like it's got that taste, the draft. They haven't cleaned the tubes and the draft.
Right. Yeah. No, they're out of the beer you want. But also,
everything tastes the same because it's all the same fried oil that's been there for 4 years.
Right. But then again, it's not a bad wing.
No, And it's, you got a lot of TVs and stuff. So,
You get the UFC.
It should be better.
It's got all the resources.
Big rep for a long time. And now they've been eclipsed by several of these other places.
Yep. Spend a lot on advertising. I think Buffalo Wild Wings is Tennessee. Hardee's, yep. Carl. Yeah. Chicken salad chick.
Yes.
Have you had that, Pat? I've never heard of this.
Yeah, we just got one in Louisville. It actually moved into the Raisin Cane's that moved out on Shelbyville Road. Yeah, and I have had it, and I like it. I like
chicken
it.
Chicken salad chick is Missouri. Guess what?
There we go.
Your alma mater. I mean, come on. Almost the most sold beverage at both is Diet Coke.
Little overpriced. I think they're good. I think it actually started by an Auburn grad.
Really?
Yeah, I believe it's actually
chicken salad
ties.
Chick.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Finally, Kentucky. Oh, no, we're not. So we got a couple more. Kentucky is Dairy Queen. Chicken isn't even their main thing, which is true. Basketball is their main thing.
Yep.
But it is better than you expected. Unfortunately, no matter how good the chicken may be, ice cream will always be the star.
That's good.
That's not bad. This is clever.
I do love their chicken tendies with a little. They do the white gravy on the side, which really puts it over the top. So I think Mark Stoops. Yep, their chicken tender basket, very similar.
And then finally, Vanderbilt is Long John Silver's.
Oh God.
Sure, they sell chicken, but no one is going there for the chicken. If you hated fish and no one else was open, you might be a hard choice between their chicken and going to bed hungry. As the Vanderbilt football program.
Oh, boy.
Not bad.
No, it's
not
good. Bad. It's well done.
Not bad at all. All right. We are deep in here. We are deep in this podcast. So we'll be back on Monday for more talk. March Madness getting closer. The big tournaments are next week. The smaller ones are wrapping up. Should be plenty of mayhem. So continue to subscribe. Appreciate your sharing us on social media and telling your friends about it. We will talk to you later.